Welcome to Stoma and Continence Conversations from Coloplast Professional. I'm Paul, Ostomy Care Education Manager here at Coloplast. As a specialist nurse, I know that stoma and bowel and bladder issues impact the lives of those that you care for. This podcast is here to support your educational needs and help you in supporting your patients. You'll hear from fellow healthcare professionals and experts by experience and discuss the latest hot topics in the world of stoma, continence care and specialist practice. This time,
anything to do with your eyes, your bottom or your penis, it scares the hell out of you. Even though I'm an old boy, I still don't look good. When I had my operation and I woke up with this new attachment to my tummy, I felt like a brand new person. I know that I was really highly medicated on morphine and all sorts, but I felt like a brand new person.
This time I've got the privilege of having a very special guest, and I've known him for a number of years. But before I introduce our special guest, I would just like to say, hi, Hannah, how are you?
I'm good, Paul. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Thank you. I'm trying my hardest not to rush this introduction, but I am just so excited. I really want to get our special guest on. So without any further ado, Steve, are you there, Steve?
Hi, Paul.
Thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. As I said in my introduction, I've known you for a number of years now, but just in case any of the listeners haven't seen Steve or haven't heard of Steve, do you want to give everybody just a brief introduction, tell everybody who you are and your story with a stoma?
Yeah, I'm Steve on Instagram, aka Baghdaddy Steve, a proud ostomy owner. I've had my ostomy now since 2015. I was diagnosed with IBD in 2008, about the early part of 2008. Just before I was diagnosed, I was having accidents. I was finding lots of blood in my boxer shorts, and I was worried that I had cancer, that all sorts was going wrong. So it was about 3 months before I actually got a diagnosis. And when they said it was more than likely IBD, you know, inflammatory bowel disease, they didn't know which sort it was. They sent me for tests. When he come back saying you've got ulcerative colitis, I was kind of really pleased that it wasn't cancer or anything untoward. And that was the start of my understanding what this was all about. Now, my story, like I said, from 2008 till 2013, I was on all the usual medication, the prednisolone, steroids. I can't even think of the name of the drugs that I was on, but they were all controlling my issues, basically. And until about 2013, then my sort of inflammation in my bowel really kicked up and ramped up a bit. And then they tried me on the biological medication. They basically was saying, look, we're going to have to use all these meds, try them. Some were working, some wasn't. And in the end, I didn't even hear about a bag, to be honest. It wasn't until that I went in 2015 in absolute agony, having lost lots of blood and basically a death's door. That's how I felt. I felt there was no point in me carrying on. You know, there was no quality to my life at all. It just was getting worse and worse. And it was, I think, when the surgeon saw me in this predicament. I mean, I was like a 48, you know, a grown man crying. You know, he must have thought, nah, this guy's had enough. And then he said, right, I'm going to remove your bowel the following day. You know, and I was just thankful that something was being done. But I almost felt like that having a bag was always portrayed as the last case scenario after having tried all the medications, the very final stage. It's kind of like your body hasn't responded to the medication. So it kind of put a negative tilt on having a bag. Now, for me, I didn't really know much about having a bag. So, you know, that night before my operation, I spent a lot of time writing on social media on a few of the IBD help sites and stuff. And you know, by the morning I kind of knew everything there was to know about having a bag. The only thing I was worried about was having the injection in the back. In the end, it was a learner doctor that did the epidural, so I was petrified. So the next day, when I had my operation and I woke up with this new attachment to my tummy, I felt like a brand new person. I know that I was really highly medicated on morphine and all sorts, but I felt like a brand new person, almost like a cancer had been lifted, even though I didn't have cancer. It's just really about me getting my head around this new way of life for myself. You know, and I did lots of things. There was a few ups and downs, and I had a blood clot on my lung, you know, which put me back in hospital. But moving down the line, you know, lots of things changed, and my new way of life was brilliant. I'd go to work on a Monday, and everyone would be, oh, it's Monday, isn't it? You know, not very happy. And I was like living this brand new life that I'd been given in my sort of middle age as well. You know, it's just, I just felt fantastic. So then I did a few things in order to make me feel like the old Steve. You know, I did a calendar shoot, a boxing match, you know, just things which made me take off my top, show my bag, and earn some money for charity in the process. But to be fair, the charity was just a little like a byproduct of what I was doing. I was doing this for me to get my mojo back. So anything bowel related comes up, I was putting my name down. I was, you know, doing underwear shoot, catwalks, I put my hands out and things was just coming to me. It was a case of embrace. And all the while, my mojo was coming back. I just felt brilliant. So therefore, the bag for me, it's never been an issue. Having my moobs, that's the issue. That has to stop me going swimming, not the bag. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, I'm 53 now, and I think the second COVID lockdown, I think when they started to do like a breakfast for half price, and it's Thursday, and you already had three breakfasts in town, you know, I think that for me, it's the bag's never been a negative thing. I've had two peristomal hernias. The first one was I had my ostomy in 2015. I had my first peristomal hernia in 2018. I think everyone's warned about the dangers of peristomal hernias and how they can occur, but I don't think you really take it seriously until you've witnessed one or seen one. You know, I've seen my friends with them, and horrific, unsightly things. Mine was like a boob. It was just like a big boob on my tummy. Everything that I wore stuck out. It was unsightly. The first one wasn't that painful. It was just looked horrible. This was from, I think I'd eaten a big bag of nuts and hadn't drunk in between, and I had a blockage. I'm not sure whether I had a sneezing fit the day after or a coughing fit, but I felt the actual tear when they shot through in one go. And, you know, I knew something was amiss. I knew that I'd learnt the error of my ways, so I'd still eat nuts and that, but not in the sort of the amount that I used to. And so I had my repair in 2018, and also had a proctectomy, which is, you know, removal of the rectum, and because it was no longer used. I was warned of the risk of cancer with leaving an organ that's no longer used anymore. So I won't be smuggling anything into jail. To be fair, right, after that operation, my peristomal hernia, my proctectomy, my bum operation, healed within 4, maybe 5 weeks tops. You know, and I was really lucky there, because I know lots of people that have suffered for years and still are, and they're having to have them vacuum packed. And, you know, I had more trouble with issues with my hernia, because obviously it was an open wound all the way down my stomach. I was having loads of infections and bits that just weren't healing. But unfortunately, that peristomal hernia repair lasted about a month. The hospital had warned me that the first operation, we kind of do it as it's not an issue. But the second one and after that, they're going to try and talk me out of it. And it's more about quality of life than anything else. But it's really painful, the second one. And to be fair, even if it wasn't, I would have said it was. because I really needed it gone. It was an unsightly huge lump on the side of my tummy. All I could see was that, you know, I could see about an inch of my right foot and the whole of my left foot. So, you know, and I have a belly, but it was horrible. I couldn't wear no clothes. Everything was black in my wardrobe. But I had to wait about 12 months for this operation. You know, this thing just grew and grew. Luckily, there was a surgeon from my hospital in Good Hope in Sutton Coldfield that decided he's going to do it a different way, where we layered the pig mesh. He kind of layered it over itself where the joint was, and he repaired it with keyhole with about 13, 14 titanium staples, almost like wallpapered it up onto my tummy. And that's how he explained it to me. And if you can see my hand now, it's doing a wallpapering thing. It's like a sweeping up. And now, my tummy was really swollen from that operation. And the fact that it had staples in, titanium staples, the healing process, it just took months and months, but it was really painful. Every time my stomach was shrinking, it felt like cats clawing inside. It was really uncomfortable. But fingers crossed, that's held tight. I advocate a lot for hernia wear, for the vest tops, for the boxers, you know, with the extra band. Obviously, you've got to engage your core whenever you're training. You know, you've got to strengthen your core. You've got to try and do anything you can in order to protect yourself. But clothing does help as well. You can't rely on it. But it's very rarely. I never go to the gym unless I've got my stuff on, you know. And even if I'm going out, you know, I've normally got something on that will flatten it up, because, you know, even though I'm an old boy, I still want to look good.
I just think about, you've been talking about these issues that, I mean, they sound horrific, all the backwards and forwards you've had with your hernias. How did that affect your actual stoma? Did it affect your stoma function, the products you were using? How did you cope from that side of things? Obviously, we've mentioned the clothing side of things, but did it affect your functionality of your stoma? And like I say, did you experience more leakages because of it?
Mainly, my issues were blockages. They were horrific. I mean, a blockage is uncomfortable anyway, but you kind of always, I kind of always expect it to come out eventually. I mean, I've been in the bathroom, you know, having eaten a lasagna and peas, and the bag's off, and I'm massaging it. I've had no movement for like 10, 12 hours, and you're crouching, you're doing squats in the shower, and then all of a sudden, it's like a shotgun fire, and peas are flying up the wall. It's just it's ridiculous. You know, it's really strange, but I don't really eat chew peas anymore. It's a weird thing, but you'd have to have a stoma to understand that, really. The blockages were terrible. So it really, you're kind of aware that you need to chew more, you need to drink in between, you need to definitely start choosing foods that don't agree with you.
When you were having your counselling, did you have counselling before your first hernia repair? And if you did they cover everything that you felt should have been covered?
I wouldn't have called it counselling, Paul. It was kind of the surgeon saying, it's very, very roundabout way. It didn't seem that important at the time, the way he explained it to me. He was a fantastic surgeon. But sometimes, you know, I don't know, I would have preferred to heard something like that from another ostomate. For instance, you know, how well I felt after having my initial ostomy. I went down all the route of having all the medication. And if I'd have known how well I felt straight after my ostomy, I wouldn't have suffered for 2 years. I really wouldn't. I'd have opted and elected to have it done. Now, in the end, you know, they said there's no way of re-sewing it back, reattaching it back to the cuff that they leave from your rectum. There was no way. It was like sausage skin, they said. But I'd done my homework. I'd already decided that this ostomy was my lifesaver, and I loved it. So I wasn't going to have a reversal anyway. So when they said, you know, there's no way you can have a reversal, I wasn't going to anyway. I was quite happy with it. But I kind of think if I'd have had someone like myself going to speak to me and saying, right, and what's your quality of life right now? This is how I felt after I had my ostomy. Now, I know that not everyone is the same, and a lot of people struggle with it physically and mentally. But for myself, just hearing someone talking about it in a more positive tilt, that would have made me not suffer. Because the last 2 years were horrific. I was going through a really tough breakup, and also living this secretly, basically. But then again, you know, things happen for a reason, and I'm not one to hold grudges on anything. So everything happens in the end for a reason. So, but I definitely would have. This is why it's passionate to me, to let people know, you know, that it's not the end of the world, and things will get better. My life is so much better now than it ever has been.
I'm lucky enough to follow Steve on social media, and all his social media is in the podcast description. But Steve, one of the things kind of you brought up, and again, I see it on your social media, and that's, you know, you are a massive advocate of communication. And I'd like to just kind of go back a little bit to the start of your story, if that's okay. And you were saying about the symptoms that you were having, you know, you're saying you were getting blood in your boxes and you had this fear that it was going to be cancerous, and you're going to have a cancer diagnosis. And we talked to a lot of people, and luckily enough, I've had the privilege of talking to another ambassador called Chris, and he said something very, very similar. And it was that thing of almost not quite denial, but not wanting to face those, that the potential to have a really life-changing diagnosis. I know I'm kind of preempting this question, but if you were to talk to anybody else, another, especially men, because men are, we are nightmares when it comes to even going to the GP. Have you got a message that you'd kind of like to say to people about, you know, not hiding?
Yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to any men, I'm talking about myself now, anything to do with your eyes, your bottom, or your penis, it scares the hell out of you. And it's, everything else is on the table as far as I'm concerned. But them three things petrifies me. And it was 3 months before I literally had a cough, and I followed through. And I've gone to change my boxers, and they were just full of blood. And I thought, oh, that's not right. You know, and I'd had piles before, but it wasn't that. Just a worry of not knowing. But then being scared to go to the doctors. I wasn't my relationship, I'm not going to go into the relationship, but we wasn't close. So this was all kept in my head. And it just got worse and worse until the fear of having cancer had overrode all the thoughts in my head, you know, and I went there. And when he said, you know, and he put his finger at my bum, which is a bit of a shock, it was kind of so pleased that he didn't come back with anything really more sinister. I think really, I mean, every guy I speak to, and I have lots of people that will come to me, you know, because they've got issues with their bowel, or they're having their poos changed, and it's nice because they're not, it's certainly something that a lot of people don't want to talk about, but because they know that you've been through it, and you're not going to laugh or take the mickey. It's just, it's genuine question, isn't it? You know, and it's nice to be able to give someone, just to, even if you just say, look, you know, just go check it out. I'm not a professional in any way, shape or form. But if you've got a chance to change it before it gets really bad, then it's got to be worth a visit, isn't it? You know, it doesn't matter how scared you are of the doctors. I wish I'd have gone earlier. I do wish I'd have gone earlier. I think it had already passed. But, you know, whatever it is, you know, it happened. I can't change nothing. But
I always call it the poo taboo.
It is.
It's the poo taboo. Nobody wants to talk about it.
Oh, it's different with my mates. Everyone's talking about it now.
You've broken the taboo.
Absolutely.
You broke the poo taboo. And I think it is such an important taboo that we do actually break as well, and bring things like altered bowel habits out into the open, so to speak. Going back to the hernia and the hernia repair, it's a little bit like reversal. I know that, you know, even if you were, like you said, Steve, if you were offered a reversal, you wouldn't have gone for it. But I think for a hernia repair, it isn't just a passing thing that you can, you know, oh, yep, you're going to have a hernia repair. Because just like yourself, you can have, there are so many potential complications. And, you know, I know that the nurses listening are going to be going, yep, we know these complications. But I think it's that thing of bringing the hernia and the importance of that communication with the individual before the actual hernia takes place. And I know I had a really, really long conversation with you, didn't I, Steve, about hernias. And I'm sure Hannah has seen it as well, and I'd like to kind of get her take on this as well. And it's the amount of times I'd be walking through the wards and suddenly I'd see a patient and I'd be going, what are you doing in? And they'd be like, oh, I've just had my hernia repair. And for me, it was just like, I almost felt that I let people down because I didn't feel that I'd given that individual the support and that communication before they had their hernia repair. And I think there's so many potential problems that could occur. It's having that open discussion.
It is an open discussion, but what you got to remember is you're giving the information to someone that's just had an ostomy. So they've already got a lot of stuff in their brain to deal with. I kind of shut down through a lot of information that came after that. The hernia, it was just another word. It didn't really mean that much. I was dealing with having an ostomy, and it wasn't until I had one that I realized the uncomfortableness. And not only that, most the surgeons that and the doctors that I was with, they were like, well, we're not going to repair it. It was really about your quality of life. You know, I know people have had hernias for years and they haven't repaired it because they're getting on with life. I think I was told by a doctor that we tried to talk people out of having the repairs. And I thought, wow, they're not going to talk me out of it.
I actually agree with what you're saying, that I think when you are in hospital after your operation, there is so much information thrown at you that you are trying to absorb and pick up. And it's so much to take on board. And I also agree with what you're saying about the hernia being, I know they're looking at the generalized quality of life, if it's not causing you any pain or function, but it is an appearance thing. I mean, I had a patient once who he'd got a hernia and he was actually stopped in the supermarket because security thought he was smuggling something out the supermarket. So he had that horrific embarrassment of being stopped in a full supermarket by security because they actually thought he was smuggling something out. And I don't know how that can be considered not affecting your quality of life. But he did show not just the security guard, but a good amount of the supermarket that I shall not mention all got a little look, shall we say.
Right. I mean, that's terrible, the fact that you feel that you have to. I got accused in a nightclub. I got accused of doing drugs. Because I was facing the opposite way, emptying my bag in a toilet, in a cubicle, and three bouncers came into the room. They must have thought I was a big lad because three of them, they'd emptied the toilets from the people that were in there. So all these lads were waiting outside. Now, I'd had a few drinks, and he's saying, we know what you're up to in there. And I was like, what? And I've come out and washed my hands, and he's saying that he basically thought I was doing drugs in there. And like a Western, I've lifted my T-shirt up like a Western, like I was showing my gun, and just showed him my bag, and he went and bought me a drink and apologised to me.
At least you did get that apology, I suppose.
Well, I posted it online, and one of the women who runs a group of doormen, they're called supervisors now, she was saying that all of her door staff are trained now to ask whether you have a medical appliance, because, you know, you can't just assume that people are up to no good. You know, he looked under the door, saw my feet were facing the wrong way, and just put one and one together and thought, right. But I like the way they brought three bouncers into the air.
Well, you are the Viking, Steve.
Oh, dear. You have to have a laugh. Life is short.
You do. You do.
Absolutely. And yeah, you're right there. Life is short. But I think what you've shown us today, Steve, is that actually having a stoma is the beginning of that life.
Oh, it really is.
And I think that's one thing that, again, we want people to take away from this, is that stomas aren't the negative thing that they're potentially perceived to be. And they're actually a really wonderful thing for most people that have them.
It is. I mean, I remember my granddad. I remember going to visit my granddad as a child. Now, I was brought up in care, so this was way before then. I remember being like about 6 or 7 years old and visiting my granddad. Now, he had a bag. But I remember it being full of wee. But obviously, it was a urostomy. But it just being horrified. Yeah, you know, but no one explained to me what it was and stuff. And obviously, they were completely see-through. he kind of left the impression with me that these are things that happen to old people, and they really aren't. I mean, if you're anywhere, you know, in the sort of ostomy fraction, and you see people on social media, the amount of youngsters with them, it's phenomenal, you know. And these are the people that are showing them, which is important, you know. These are the people that are saying, look, I've got a bag, so what? I'm going to wear my bikini. I'm going to, you know, go in my shorts, you know. It's really good. It's really positive because it shows you can live, and, you know, and it is a stigma that needs to be broken, and it is being broken slowly but surely.
We are breaking that, you know, the stereotype. And I think it's only through people like yourself, Steve, who are true positive role models and positive advocates of stomas and stoma formation, talking about things like parastomal hernias, which I know, as we said before, is one of your passions. On behalf of Hannah and myself, I'd just like to say thank you so much for joining us on this podcast, and promise me you won't be a stranger and you'll join us again another day.
No, absolutely. You know I'll be there, Paul. Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it.
Stoma and Continence Conversations is brought to you by Coloplast Professional. To learn more, visit coloplastprofessional.co.uk.